relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
This episode of the America First podcast with me, Sebastian Gorka, is brought to you by Franklin Armory. Shop freedom, quality, and innovation at franklinarmory.com. Franklin Armory, we are facilitators of freedom.
Our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
I have a dream.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people... And the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. And I'm delighted to welcome our special guest host, Jim Hansen.
Hey, folks. I am Jim Hansen. And I'm happy to be sitting in for Dr. G, who is shooting something amazing, which you will see in the upcoming weeks. But listen, I wanted to go ahead and get this rolling and do what we've done the last couple times I have guest hosted, and that is take our Rumble chat. And incidentally, shout out to Rumble for going public on the stock exchange. They now have their own ticker symbol. They are a thing, and they are a growing thing. So we're happy to be streaming there, and we're happy to have the lively, rowdy, savage America First commenting crew in the Rumble chat. So if you're not there, join. If you are there, start picking topics for the third hour freestyle rant that I will do based on your suggestions. So come up. It can be pop culture. It can be politics. I don't care. It's up to you guys. So the more creative, weird, and interesting, the better. And what we'll do is we'll curate those lightly and then pick the top three and put those into a Twitter poll during the second hour of the show. And then based on the votes of the people on Twitter, I will do a freestyle rant in hour three. And that's always fun. I mean, what the heck? Who knows? It could be anything. I want to start by telling everyone about a really cool conference I was at this last week in Miami. It was called the National Conservatism Conference. It was the third iteration of this, put on by an organization called the Edmund Burke Foundation. So very, very deeply old school conservatives. And really, if you're not familiar with this organization, I'm going to tell you you should be. Nationalconservatism.org. They have the right ideas. And what I want to kind of talk about and put in all of your minds, if you're not familiar with this, is the idea that we on the right, we the MAGA, we the America First crowd, we the new right, the based right, us, we need a full-fledged ideology, platform, and governing set of principles because the time is ripe for us to take over. I mean, we are winning, we are ascendant. We are the ones with the momentum. We are the reason people are joining the Republican Party is because of us. And in large part, you got to give credit where credit's due. Donald Trump lit that fuse. Okay, he lit that fuse like when they put on the old cartoons, the barrels of dynamite blowing up. He did that. And it's working. He kicked that over. It's driven the left crazy. They've shown just exactly how bad their ideas are. They've started doing things that normal Americans can't stomach. So all of those people need a home. We have a home. We are the right. We are inviting new people to this place. And we are displacing the rhino, moderate, spineless, thin-lipped, milquetoast, cream-in-the-coffee Republicans like Mitch and the rest. All right? We're pushing them out of the way. They may retain power. They'll keep their claws in. You know, it's hard. It's a long war. All right? It's a generational fight. But every iteration of elections, we get more of our people in and push more of their people out, putting more pressure on the top. So why should people come to our team? What is it? And here's the thing. No offense at all to Donald Trump. If he's the candidate next time, I will back him to the hilt. Heck, I would back a yellow dog before I would vote for any Democrat. But Trump is the one who did this. We just can't rely on Trumpism as a governing philosophy. I could love the man. We can say he gave us 3 Supreme Court justices. He saved the Republic, because it's true. But what we have to have is now a something that goes beyond him. All right. He can be of it, but we have to have a bigger thing. And I think national conservatism can offer that. And I think, you know, there's a statement of principles at the website, and it's not going to surprise anybody. It's essentially a return to the founding principles of this country, but extremely well articulated. What I want to tell you about this National Conservatism Conference in Miami was, it's kind of like, you know, CPAC is a big party for our team. You know, everybody goes, you see your friends, you see all the radio hosts you like, you see all that kind of stuff, you know, and we all hang out. That's one part of the movement. That's the populist movement. That's vital. That's how we get together and build momentum. But what this was kind of the academic intellectual wing of our team. These are the people who write the weighty tomes, the big old books full of the ideas that explain how Edmund Burke, crusty old, you know, I think he was Irish, but whatever, he's a Brit of some flavor, how his ideas now can be translated into what we stand for and what we're doing. What is America First? What is MAGA? And really now, what I want to ask you to consider is, what is national conservatism? All right, and the first thing you'll hear from the left is, oh, it's national conservatism because that's the same as national socialism, and obviously they're Nazis. No. We are people who understand that the nation state is the fundamental place on this planet where cultures exist. And we have a unique culture. Americans have a unique culture. We have an exceptional nation built on principles no one else did before, that the individual person, the people, owns the country, and the government works for us. We cede to them some ability to boss us around, but a very limited ability. And what national conservatism says is, we believe in the nation state. We are not global citizens. I have a United States passport. I do not have a UN passport, and I never will. So what national conservatism now can do for all of us is allow us to have a political platform not tied to one person, tied to a larger thing. Because what's a Republican? What is, if you say, I'm a Republican, what's that? It means nothing at this point. It really, literally means nothing. And because it includes the gutless, spineless, rhino, thin-lipped, milquetoast, cream-in-a-coffee Republicans, it's actually bad for us to say that we're Republicans. As national conservatives, we are something broader. We are a movement. And like I said, we are the movement that has the energy that has the rest of it. And something very important happened during this conference, because I know that a lot of people on the MAGA, America First, part of our party, of the new right, have had a beef with Heritage as part of Con Inc., Conservative Inc., part of the moderate Republican crowd. And it's been valid for a while, for a long time. They have sucked up a lot of resources, and they have not stood and fought when we needed them. I saw that change. It changed a while ago. What I saw at the NatCon conference was the president of the Heritage Foundation, Kevin Roberts, who's been there for a while and who is fundamentally changing the culture there. He was brought in to do it in recognition of the fact that we are now a fighting party, not a capitulating party who wants to, oh, stand on the moral high ground and lose gracefully. No, we're not going to lose. We're going to win. And we're going to win because we fight. And he came as the president of Heritage, whose budget literally dwarfs all of the other participants combined. He said to that conference, I don't come to tell you to become part of Heritage's conservatism. I come to tell you we, meaning Heritage, are part of your movement. That is a fundamental and seismic shift in the Republican Party, in the conservative movement, in national conservatism as the ideology that animates all of us. So read up. If you're unaware of it, read up. There's plenty of it. I've got a piece coming out tomorrow that explains some of this. But I want you to get familiar with that. And next segment, we're going to be talking to David Riboy, whose idea was used. His "Do You Know What Time It Is" idea was used by Kevin Roberts in his speech. All right, that right there is crossing a couple of previously boundaries and now common ground. We are one team, and we are going to crush the woke left. I'm Jim Hansen. This is America First Radio, and we're kicking butt and taking names. I'll be back after the break.
Whether it's the regular Hellcat or whether it's the compensated RDP with that miniature red dot, I love them all. How did it take so long to invent a factory compensated subcompact 9mm? Well, guess what? Springfield did it, and I'm a huge fan, and I'm Sebastian Gorka.
The Hellcat from Springfield Armory is still the smallest, highest capacity micro compact in the world. Available in standard or optics-ready configurations, the class-leading capacity of the Hellcat gives you 11+1 with the standard magazine and 13+1 with the included extended mag. The definitive concealed carry pistol is here. The Hellcat from Springfield Armory gives you the capacity to defend.
Welcome back to America First with our very special guest, Uncle Jimbo. It's Jim Hansen.
Hey, folks, I am Jim Hansen, and I am pleased to be bringing on a good friend, a colleague, and a compatriot in the fight. My favorite pragmatist. Do we not have him yet? Okay, I'll keep talking about him. He's a giant in the conservative movement, not just as a thought leader, but because he's got deltoids the size of cannonballs. And he is my good friend, David Riboy. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Hey. Oh, my God. What an introduction.
Yeah, man. Well, I had to do you right. I was going to break into the Hans and Franz and say, first we put on oil, geez. Then we put on the light cotton shirt. But dude, we got important stuff to talk about. We were both down in Miami. You're now hometown, you and Miles, the coolest dog in town. And I got to admit, dude, I'm always the optimist and you always bring me back down to earth. But I was really heartened by what I found, by the people who were there, by the energy, by the ideas. But one thing in particular really blew me away. And that was Kevin Roberts, president of Heritage, saying that Heritage is part of our movement, not the other way around. Did that hit you too?
It really did. I mean, it was great to hear the president of Heritage bogart my catchphrase,
right,
which is know what time it is.
Yep. He opened and closed his speech with your catchphrase.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, that's good. Obviously, I'm very happy he did that, and I did watch the speech, and I thought it was fantastic. And I mean, it was fantastic from anybody, but very significant, as you said, from the president of the country's largest conservative think tank. I mean, this is what people used to derisively call conservative ink. I mean, this is the giant flagship operation that's kind of very well funded, has been around, I guess, for about 40 years now. And it's great that they're finally changing direction. I mean, it's a wonderful thing. They have a lot of resources. They still have a lot of great people on staff. I think Kevin Roberts coming in now from the Texas Public Policy Foundation, where I used to work in Austin, portends something really, really great. And I think they're going to shake things up over there. And when they shake things up over there, the reach of Heritage is so great that it's really going to have a lot of downstream effects, which will be good.
No doubt. And I think the one thing, they're irreplaceable in one respect. We're never going to gather that many smart people from our team to do the math on tax policy and economic policy and figure out how to pay off our trillions of debt and figure out whether our Navy is better than the Chinese Navy, even though they've got more ships, but we've got more powerful, you know, pride and pronoun parades. You know, I mean, someone has to actually do that deep digging, and no one but them can do it. You know, it's kind of like the network effect. No other think tank is going to grow to that capability. But we also, and myself included, I never thought they were a fighting organization because they were that old school conservative. And he literally said, he closed the speech saying, you know, what time is it? It's fighting time, was what he said. And the idea, if we get the brain power, the subject matter expertise of them arrayed with the other people there, the Hillsdale, Claremont, you know, the people who have been saying this, and it's not like this hasn't been talked about, you know, the idea of national conservatism for a long time. But I think now, if we can coalesce this, you know, two sets of Con Inc. and national conservatism into one larger entity, we're going to be deadly.
Yeah, look, I agree. I think there are a couple of big things that set, let's say, the new Heritage or national conservatism apart from the old conservatism, which the old Heritage was like the exemplar of. I think for a long time after the Cold War, people started, especially conservatives, started to take a lot of things for granted. They thought, okay, it's always going to be, you know, the people will always be relatively virtuous. They're not going to go crazy. they're not going to be, you know, degenerate, you know, lunatics on one hand. On the other hand, the intelligence services and law enforcement and all of the mechanisms of government that were supposed to keep us safe and keep us
grounded
with the conception of equal justice under the law, like that will be around forever. And it's only a matter of figuring out things like what's the correct tax rate, mm-hmm. or how do we cut the budget, or, you know, little tinkering around the edges. Well, I think what Kevin Roberts clearly understands and what we understand is that, no, we've got much larger problems because we cannot take these things for granted. And national conservatism realizes that we're going to need that this stuff isn't value neutral. That if you Right. if you don't take a position on the culture war issues, on issues like the corruption of FBI and CIA and law enforcement and all these things, it's not like you're automatically going to reset back to square one and you just quibble over these things. That Nope. means you get rolled. That means the left will roll right over you, and because they have politicized everything. So it's the recognition that that in order to fight these things, we cannot have a value neutral, laissez-faire David French type of conservatism anymore. We're just not
He's
there.
More like roll over on your back and show your belly like a submissive dog, I suppose, than right. laissez-faire. But your point is so valid, because without that coming from an institution as respected, as, you know, pervasive as Heritage, our side was never going to gain the institutional heft to actually fight back effectively. And I think that was a change. Now, you know, when you've got Michael Anton and Kevin Roberts essentially espousing the same fighting idea, although Michael's pretty sure we're going to lose, I think. But I think the idea that at least now those guys and the other people, you know, Matt Peterson and the guys from who created the brains of Claremont, of which you're a part, that's now part of the institutional heft of our team, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. There are a lot of people who say, oh, why do we need these things? Why do we need these think tanks? Why do we need, you know, research institutions and big places like Heritage? And I think that's wrong. We definitely do, because like it or not, we are living in the world that the progressives have created for the last 100 years, meaning like the currency of government. Government operates through these things. Like that's the currency. You cannot fight a bad policy with nothing. You need to fight it with a white paper. It's just how it's done. And if you need, I mean, we saw this under the Trump administration very, very clearly, which is the Trump people would come in there and we'd say, okay, we want to do X, Y, and Z. And then they would be hit by the bureaucracy. They would be hit by the bureaucracy in the deep state with 50 different white papers, half of which
were get rolled. Well, dude, I want to
get rolled.
I want to dig in a little more. We got to take a break and do some business here. But after this, I want to continue this and also hear about, you've got an interesting new thing going on. I want to hear about that. This is Jim Hansen sitting in for Dr. G doing America First Radio. We'll be back after the break.
MyPillow is having their biggest sheet sale of the year. You all have helped build MyPillow into the amazing company that it is today. Now, Mike Lindell, my buddy, the inventor and CEO, wants to give back to my listeners. The Percal bed sheet set is available in a variety of colors and sizes, and they're on sale. For example, the queen size is regularly $89.98, but now for you, just $39.98 with your listener promo. Order now, because when they're gone, they're gone. The Percal sheets are breathable and have a cool, crisp feel. They come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Don't miss out on this incredible offer. It's a limited supply, so be sure to order now. Call 1-800-829-8468, promo code Gorka, or just go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and plug in G-O-R-K-A. That's 1-800-829-8468 or MyPillow.com, code Gorka. Welcome back to America First with our very special guest, Uncle Jimbo. It's Jim Hansen.
It is. And welcome back to America First Radio. We are continuing to talk with my good friend David Reboy, who is a senior fellow at the Claremont Institute. And we were talking about a collection of conspiracy theorists, all of us down in Miami, doing good things and planning the counterattack against the woke left, of which Claremont is a leading force and had a lot of their very smart people down there. But David, you also had a panel where you were the guy who they brought on to talk about art and beauty. And I thought it was actually really cool. So I want to hear, you know, what your take is on the new venture that you have planned and how that ties into a kind of rebirth of our culture.
Sure. Thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed the panel. It was something different. I wanted to talk about art and aesthetics and the new right and sort of what I see as the problem one of the big problems with culture today. And I think we're at a point, at least on the right, or let's say the new right or young right, where we are, you know, maybe poised to change some of these things. So basically, I think the major point is that at some point we had this expectation of when we would get older, the things that we enjoyed culturally, artistically, or whatever, would be more complex, more more abstract, things that you had to kind of work to really understand a little bit, things that don't necessarily come easily.
More adult. And
more adult, exactly. we had art and culture for kids, and then we had art and culture for adults. And I think at some point, and you know, we're Gen X, so like this, some of this kind of falls on us. But around the time of the late 90s, and I traced it to the re-release of Star Wars in 1997, all of a sudden, the barriers, the boundaries between kid stuff and adult stuff just completely collapsed. Mm-hmm. So now you have, you know, you've got 40 and 50-year-olds running around and saying, hey, you know what? I'm still obsessed with Star Wars, and it's totally cool. And the only thing I watch are superhero movies. I think we're a lot poorer as a civilization and as a country because the market for adult entertainment has disappeared. And look, even when we say something like adult entertainment, immediately we think of pornography.
Right.
Because we no longer have a conception of what it means to, we don't have romantic comedies for adults or dramas about getting old and divorcing and, you know, all of these things that are kind of part of life that are part of the, let's say the history of cinema up until now.
Well, now every movie now has to have, yeah, you know, an explosion every 30 seconds and all that. And I'm not going to lie, I watch my fair share of the superhero movies, but I also take your point that part of what I do is try to expand my own boundaries because I don't want to just entertain myself like I'm the guy in the chair in Idiocracy, you know, eating a tub of lard and watching some guy get kicked in the nads. You know, that's not an improvement to my life. I want to expand that. And I think that's what you're saying.
That's exactly what I'm saying. I think that there is something that accrues within a person when they spend time and work trying to understand something that doesn't necessarily come easily. You know, you read
it's
a
good
book
for your brain
bit,
too.
It's good for, well, that's the thing. It's good for your brain. You know, you read a book that's a little bit difficult. That's great. And the rewards are wonderful. It's much better than reading People magazine. And I think we really need to kind of bring that back. And look, I mean, it's not the biggest political issue out there. It's not abortion or inflation or nuclear war or whatever. But I do think that people should be talking about it because these things do have an effect. And we're in the position where I think people are starting to want something more. They look around and they see, like, look, the popularity of Jordan Peterson. What does he say? He says, "Clean your room." What is that? It's an exhortation to try.
Right. To expand your boundaries
and do something.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I think you're onto something, and I hope more people take the time to expand their own horizon. Make yourself a better person. Get based. Do something good with your life. David Reboy, Claremont Fellow, big guy, music guy, art guy, good guy. This is Jim Hansen. We'll be back with more America First after the break.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Welcome back to America First with our very special guest, Uncle Jimbo. It's Jim Hansen.
Yes, I am. And we're back doing America First Radio. And pleasure this segment to be joined by Amber Athey. She is the Washington editor for The Spectator and has a Substack, which you should subscribe to, called Unfit to Print, which I kind of like. It's edgy. Well, Amber, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Now, you had a piece in The Spectator that I read today that I loved. I am a Virginia resident, as are you. We, I think, both were surprised and pleasantly, you know, happy about the fact that we have a governor now who shares a lot of our values named Glenn Youngkin. And he just made a bold move. You know, they have now put the educational establishment and the queer left activists on notice that the trans game they've been playing in our schools isn't going to fly. So what, give me some of the specifics, give me some of the good news about this new policy.
It is an absolutely fantastic policy. Reading through it, I was just thrilled to see that Glenn Youngkin is delivering on his campaign promise to wrestle control over your kids away from student teachers' unions and school boards and giving it back to the parents. And the transgender policy in Virginia public schools before this was really just a trans lobby activism. So what they said was that regardless of the sex of a child, regardless of the gender they were born as long as they identify as something different, a member of the opposite sex or one of the million other identities that now exist, according to the left, they are actually allowed to bunk with members of the opposite sex on overnight trips. They were allowed to participate on opposite sex sport teams. They were allowed to use the bathroom that was supposedly consistent with their gender ideology. And Glenn Youngkin has basically reversed all of that. He says, first of all, even if you identify as a member of the opposite sex, you still have to use the facilities that coordinate with your biological sex. So that is directly protecting young women from having biological men invade their private spaces. And second, Youngkin implemented another part of the policy that actually requires parents to be in charge of their child's gender transition if the child chooses to transition. So there's no more the child decides to behave one way at school, encouraged by teachers or administrators, and goes home and doesn't tell their parents. The parents actually have to sign off on any official name changes or social transition. So the school is no longer able to make that decision on behalf of the parents.
And that, to me, that was the one where it was a bridge too far. The rest of the stuff is still crazy. I'm not minimizing the craziness or the wrongness or the badness of it. But the idea that a school would say a kid, a child, a minor can come to their school and decide, I want to be the opposite sex or made up a sex. And the school would go along with that, allow them to change it, call them by those names, let them dress. Some of them had closets where the kids could go get clothes for whatever their, you know, their cosplay identity is. And the parents would not be notified. That was an obscenity, and Youngkin said no, and that seems to me, even above the rest, that was the place to really fight back, because like you said, parent control.
Exactly. Parents should be, you know, intimately involved in any physical or mental health changes regarding their child. It's not a teacher's job or a school administrator's job or a school board's job to make those decisions on behalf of a parent. It's really that basic. And in fact, the Virginia Constitution makes very clear that educational rights, health rights, you know, physical health rights lay with the parent in regards to their own child. And unfortunately, there were many cases across the country and, you know, in Virginia as well, where children were being referred to a certain way at school and the teachers were hiding that from parents at home. And the claim from the left was, well, we're actually saving the transgender child from abusive parents because they define abuse as not affirming your child's gender. But we know scientifically that the vast majority of children who struggle with gender dysphoria end up growing out of it by the time they reach adulthood. So the true child abuse is making permanent life-altering decisions regarding a child who is struggling with gender dysphoria's health rather than, you know, waiting and seeing, taking the wait and see approach. So schools were complicit in that, and they projected their own abuse as abuse from the parents who refused to affirm the so-called gender of the child.
And it was this authoritarian idea, you know, taking Hillary Clinton's, it takes a village to raise a child, which there is an amount of value to the village owns the child, the state owns the child, and we'll tell you, parents, if you're doing something wrong, we're going to take that control from you, and we're going to act in the child's best interests, as if that was the default. Now, that's not to say there aren't cases where parents are abusive, but they're really minor compared to the number of parents who absolutely have their child's best interests and are best suited to make those decisions. And these guys were like, no, that'll be us. And I'm sorry, I don't want a blue-haired, intersectional America-hating major making that decision for my kids.
Exactly right. They really took the idea of saving kids from poor home situations to the extreme, where an abusive home situation was a child who was living with any parent whose politics they disagreed with, or who had a different idea about the best, you know, mental health related choices for their child. So they used that as an excuse, the existing framework regarding how to save a child from an abusive home, as an excuse to make sure that conservative or even just rational parents who were using common sense about their families and their children as a reason to take their kids away or to brainwash them separately from the home and send them back as loyal little foot soldiers.
And honestly, I understand it. It's smart. You know, it's straight out of every authoritarian, totalitarian, statist operation. Start them young, indoctrinate them, you know, from the first second you put them in the state schools, and then you own them for life. And they're, like you said, they are the proletariat warriors for the new world order. And I'm sorry, that's not how America works. And these people should know that. Hey, Amber Athey, Washington editor of The Spectator, and also her Substack is Unfit to Print, which I'm sure all of you just moved over and are now subscribing to, because she's got good stuff and she's a smart one. Thanks for being with us, Amber.
Thank you.
Gorka, this is America First, and I'm delighted to welcome our special guest host, Jim Hansen.
Hey, folks, and I am delighted to bring on a guest you guys should have been expecting when you saw that I'm hosting, because Colonel Kurt Schlichter and I have what I call the mutually assured domination pact. When I host, he's a guest. When he hosts, I'm a guest, because you guys need us both. I'm the East Coast warlord. He's the West Coast warlord. And senior columnist for Town Hall. Yeah, and now
that's part of the dispatch employment package.
God, painful. You know, they got another piece of refuse from National Review joining one of those toss off
okay,
organizations.
Let's talk about Kevin Williamson right now.
Let's do it, because he's a scumbag.
He's trying to be a good writer, and you know why he's trying? Because he freaking copies me.
Poorly.
No, I mean, look at it. His stuff has evolved over time. As I became more popular and he became more, well, his audience became more select.
Right.
he has moved into a definite kind of Schlichter vibe. And you can see the magic that I work every day, like my great Town Hall article of yesterday, whose title I forget, or today, whose title I forget. He's definitely tried to get that kind of wacky, insightful humor, and he's just ended up at the Dispatch, which shows that it didn't work.
It's the home of all, you know, useless pieces of garbage that used to be part of the Republican Party and now are just paid by billionaires on the left to attempt to trash people like us.
Well, I think it's less of a home than a shed.
Oh, maybe a shame shed.
Shame shed.
Shame shed. All right, we better.
Oh boy, Friday here on.
There we go. Well, all right. Now I also want to give a shout out because you told me in the break and that you're almost done with the next Kelly Turnbull book, which will be chock full of gunfire.
Hold on. Seven.
Nice.
Number seven, Inferno. And you and I had some discussions about some technical matters. I had some discussions today with a certain guy named Bill Wilson about ballistics.
He knows a thing or two about that.
Oh, he knows a thing or two.
All the
Kelly
things.
Kelly Turnbull is an avid user of the
Wilson Combat pistol.
Some of his things. There are relevant to Dr. Gorka. Fine car firearms play a
role. There you go.
They are a quality weapon. I may or may not own one. I don't talk about what I do or don't own.
I like the ATF to know and then be disappointed when they come and they all were lost in the obligatory fishing accident. But hey, I want to ask you a question. All right, now there's 33 senators now who are calling for a special counsel to investigate the Hunter Biden thing. Now, there's a lot to investigate there, and somebody should do it because Joe Biden and Hunter and his Jim Biden and the rest of them were running a cell access to U.S. officials to corrupt government and state actors overseas, and it's illegal to do that. So someone should do that. Someone should pay. But is a special counsel what we want?
I just think it's going to be a whitewash anyway. You know, we've been waiting how long for Durham to do his thing. You know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see Durham and Bolton's mustaches in the octagon.
Just the mustache, right?
Yeah.
Oh, just the two of you. I like that.
Yeah, the winner can rule. The
winner gets beard wax or something. So, I don't know what it is. But all right, it's a fair point. We have gotten nothing out of any special counsels or prosecutors. Is there no one we could appoint? You know, couldn't we just bring a complete ring? Couldn't we bring you in? You're a lawyer. You could literally be, if I got you the appointment, if I go over to the swamp today when I'm done and strangle them until they promise to do that, if you were special counsel, could you make something happen?
Look, I think it's manifest that there is improprieties and illegalities. From the evidence I have seen, I think that is clear. I think what I have also seen over the last few years is people who are senior members of the elite do not have to abide by the same rules we do. And through hook or by crook, they will be excused from their crimes.
Well, with Hunter, it'd be through hookers and crack.
Well, hookers and crack, yeah.
Right.
There's a meth to his madness.
shouldn't we hold him accountable? Shouldn't the fact that we have been unable be a reason to do it?
In theory.
We have to make it happen.
You know, I just, in this current environment today, with this quote-unquote justice, quote-unquote department, and the FBI and everything... Aren't we really? Isn't this really just a giant a Zoom call with Jeffrey Toobin?
Pretty much.
I mean, really, it might make us feel a little better, but it's undignified, and it doesn't really, count towards your numbers.
Then when do we start? Yeah, because here's the thing: are we going to wait until we've got executive control again, and then you and I are running through emptying executive agencies? What's that?
I don't know if that's the battle.
Okay.
As you know, you've got war and politics and strategy and all that are about making choices and prioritizing. Where are you going to get the most bang for your buck? Is putting this and the guy's I think he's a crook. I think he's a pathetic drug addict. Is putting him in jail, which arguably he deserves. Is that going to advance us, or is focusing on, say, exercising our raw power to defund and disestablish corrupt institutions like the FBI?
Okay, all right. But can't we
this much capital?
Can't we do both? Because here's the thing: it's coming out that the FBI was stopping it. They were stopping the investigation.
Well, isn't that more of the story?
Yeah. Okay. So let's go there. That's what I want. I don't care about Hunter.
Okay. That's
personally
the point.
I want Joe and I want the FBI.
I think first of all, I think the chance of getting the return on investment you're looking for as to Joe is limited. I think there are multiple avenues to addressing accountability for the FBI. They include defunding. They include oversight. There are so many things wrong. We've got to avoid the stray voltage, right? The stray voltage idea is you do so many crappy things at once, you can't focus at it. You reach around like grabbing fireflies who've broken into Hunter's meth. So they're very active fireflies. And it's just, I want to be slow and deliberate. I don't want to be emotional. And my emotions, to the extent I have any, because after I had them surgically removed during law school, my emotion is, hey, this guy has done bad things, and they're wrong, and there has to be an accounting. But is that going to run up the score for us in the big picture? Is it just going to make me feel better because cosmic justice has been sort of satisfied, maybe, with the understanding that it probably won't be?
Okay. Then let's agree on one thing. I don't care whether Hunter goes to jail. I think he'll die of his addictions and good.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not angry with him.
No.
I'm disgusted by him, and I'm saddened by him because it degrades everyone to see someone allow himself to fall into this degraded position.
Fair enough. And, but let's use what they did, what he and Joe did, to show that that was the corruption, and then the cover up of that, and then the censorship of that story involving government officials, the media, Biden campaign people. There is an actual scandal there that we want to stop because they did influence the election.
Agreed.
And let's use that, then let's use that as the lever to make that happen. And if a degenerate crackhead gets damaged, who cares?
Well, I think there are we have to make some very important points. And it's not to guys like you and me. I've been saying this a lot lately. Don't tell me how liberals are hypocrites. I don't want to hear, well, imagine if Trump did that. Okay, I'm based. I know what time it is. I don't need you to tell me Democrats are hypocrites. I do need you to tell normal guys who would rather be cooking ribeyes than talking about politics, except they can't afford to anymore. Democrats are hypocrites. That works on them. The Martha Vineyard thing, that was not for us. I mean, that was just jollies for us. Normal people looked at it and said, you know, I think it's kind of gross that you guys freaked out that a bunch of Latinx people showed up in your yard without lawn blowers or mops, and it kind of blew your mind. We've got to do say the target you're talking about is normal people.
Normal.
It's not us because we know the score.
Militant normals.
Militant. There's a book.
Dude, you got so many books up. I don't know. I'm right? Pimping them all this fast as I can.
Number 11.
Right.
I'm not showing you the 11.
No tubing on this. All right. Well, we gotta do some business here. We gotta do some business, and we will be back after the break. And he'll still be talking with Colonel Kurt Schlichter, senior columnist from Town Hall, author of the Kelly Turnbull series, author of other real books and stuff. This is Jim Hansen, author of Books and Stuff, too. Listen to follow me on Twitter at Jim Hansen DC, and be back after the break because I'm not sure what we're going to talk about, but it's going to be lively.
Welcome back to America First with our very special guest, Uncle Jimbo. It's Jim Hansen.
Now, that was some speed metal there in the break. That's the bumper music I need. Get me pumped up. We're talking with Colonel Kurt Schlichter, my good buddy, author of the Kelly Turnbull series and the upcoming, about to see the cover story I helped the tiniest bit with that he doesn't really need, Inferno. Right on. He did a little bit, but you were telling. I had Dave Reboy was on. There's the cover of Inferno. Is he surfing on a tree? Is that what he's doing?
We will have a full scale cover reveal.
So you're doing the
like
half cover
reveal.
Is this like a strip tease where you're like, oh, here's
it
part
is.
Of the cover, and then there's
it
a
is it is it's the first dance. It's the first one. They may play, you know, I don't know.
Somebody's got to make it rain before we and see
then,
the rest.
And then it's the second dance where they're playing Pour Some Sugar on Me and everything flies off. Right? Like Brandy
right.
down at the Traffic Light Lounge.
Oh, boy.
Yes, you know.
I don't know. I've never
heard
of that.
You know exactly what you were bending to.
All right. Well, hey.
Traffic Light Lounge.
Don't go there.
No.
But aside from Kelly Turner, you were talking during the break about something you were telling, because Dave Reboy was on previously and was telling some good stories himself. Yeah, and we were talking about, we were both down at the NatCon conference, which kicked butt. And
didn't invite me.
They said something about you were naughty and you weren't allowed to come, something like that. I don't know.
Are we getting back to the last
I had to pay, but anyhow, what were you telling Dave? You were telling...
Well, look, I'm telling Dave, I'm watching cable. Flipping the thing, taking a break from creating Inferno, the seventh Kelly Turnbull novel, and just flipping, you know, and like Showtime, and suddenly I'm seeing Footloose, right? And you see
Kevin Bacon one, the old one,
and they're dancing, yeah, the old one, not the new dumb one.
That doesn't.
And they got John Lithgow up there, and he's preaching about you don't dance, you don't do all these things, and I'm thinking, he's right. Okay, look what we got by allowing dancing. Okay, it's all fun and games when Laurie Singer's getting swung around by Kevin Bacon. That's fine. It's fun. Now it's drag queens, and they're shaking their groove thing and trying to groom your kids. John Lithgow was right. We should have listened to him. He's a visionary.
Because it led to twerking drag queens telling stories to children.
You throw open the doors to a bunch of kids putting on a show down at the barn to save the community center. And pretty soon you have a dude in a thong named, you know, called, you know, Madame Bulwarka. And she's, you know, and it's bad. And then your kid comes home and suddenly his pronouns snip and snap. And he's crying because his you know, manhood's oppressing him. It's a slippery slope and we're skiing down it.
All right, so, but let's you know, and funny thing, as someone was complaining yesterday on Twitter that the twerking by these drag queens, because it's a dude, I mean, drag queen is a dude.
Yeah, it's a dude.
They don't have the butt cushion, you know? You can't, the twerk is the flapping of the giant butt, and it's
well,
not
look,
there.
I think Spinal Tap's epic song, Big Bottom.
Talk about mud flaps, my girl's got them.
Yeah.
There's a cultural
big
reference.
Big Bottom, drive me out of my mind. How can I leave this behind? So, I mean, lyrical.
Yeah, that's quality. That's the kind of culture that we need to get back to.
That's some quality writing. You know, I got to tell you. I'm looking back 40 years ago at kind of like the rock culture that we grew up in, you know, driving the Camaro to the school. And there was always some kid who graduated a year ago and he's at the community college, but he still comes around the parking lot at noon in his Mustang. And it's sad, but also amazing.
Because he's trying to cruise checks.
Like Journey and stuff.
Right.
That was
a culture.
But it was a healthy culture. Because, you know, you can say a lot about, you know, guys trying to desperately score with, you know, girls in their high school senior prom. But no one was getting groomed.
You know, that's the funny thing.
We're trying to, you know, ew, gross.
We're the last generation that actually grew up in an America where we were taught what this country, the actual history of this country, we were taught what it means, we were taught what your responsibilities are, and we rebelled like all kids do.
Of course.
And come on, we were the 80s. We went the craziest, the last big hurrah of America as the dominant force, and it's been downhill since then. And I think we can harness that again without the perverted freakishness. That's not helping.
Yeah, we look. Our generation has an energy, and frankly, those crazy kids admire. I've had young people go, you know, I wish I'd grown up in the 80s. I grew up in the 2000s. Everyone kept telling me to use my inside voice.
Right.
You know, you can graduate from high school today with never have been being in a fight.
That's
could you imagine get, Yeah, I mean, there are guys who've never kicked anybody's butt and never gotten their butt kicked. Now, I didn't enjoy getting my butt kicked. I don't particularly enjoy beating the hell out of somebody. But, you know, that's kind of what a man does.
It's a reality check, and it reminds you that there are consequences to running your mouth. You know, and there are things that you have to deal with that they've been told now, oh, no, that can't happen to you, and you can do whatever you want. And they now they live online so much that they get into IRL in real life, and all of a sudden they could actually get thumped and not understand what just happened.
Well, look, I'm not saying you and I have been at the scene where a young person decided he was going to get play horsey, and he found out that he was facing a looming threat of epic proportions.
With a booming baritone voice who told him, what did you just say? We're talking about Dr. Gorka at CPAC, defending America from a mouthy grouper.
That kid should send me a case of wine.
He needs a he got his reality check.
He nearly got, that kid was about to become a gum stain to be scraped up off the hotel floor. I mean, you don't understand how physically imposing Dr. Gorka is. And he's got that Hungarian temper. Okay. Yeah. Hungarians didn't survive by being in the middle of Europe where they are by being friendly dudes who don't take offense easily. This guy makes Irish grudge holding look amateur hour.
And the look in this kid's eyes, though, that was the point we're making.
And
biggest dinner plates because he had never been confronted. He was allowed, online.
He was about to literally be dealt the pain. And I basically had to, and I used some words, but I was very directive as colonels can be. About him moving smartly in a retrograde right hecking now. And fortunately he did. And, of course, his idiot buddy decided he was going to get in your face, which went
rarely goes
badly.
Well. You know, but
it didn't go well.
As the adults in the room and as the ones who had already had our fighting time, we didn't have to beat anybody. We mocked them mercilessly and made them cry.
But they... I think that they had a reality check that indicated that perhaps these three middle-aged gentlemen who are simply trying to enjoy a cigar and would have been happy to say hi if you had come up and treated us with a modicum of respect are not going to play your idiot.
Don't poke the big dogs on the porch. Well, hey, we gotta jump. Colonel Kurt Schlichter, author of the Kelly Turnbull series, the upcoming awesomeness of Inferno, which he's strip-teasing out for us over the next week or so. This is Jim Hansen. We are doing America First Radio, and we will be back after the break.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.